Hello, and welcome to the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. I'm your host, Benjamin Douglas, and this is the show where each week I read a chapter from a different indie author. Thanks for joining me for today's reading. Hi, everybody. Thanks for being here today with me, your host, Benjamin Douglas, for the 19th episode of the Book Speaks podcast. 19! Who knew we'd make it this far? No, I knew we'd make it this far. I set out to make it much further than this, but I'm glad you're here with me today. Today, I'm going to be reading from indie author David Spiller from his novel Girl at Dunkirk. And this is another World War II historical fiction reading. As you know, the Christopher Nolan film Dunkirk is coming out here pretty quick, and on my show, we're promoting an indie author collaborative promotion, the Dunkirk Week World War II Epic Book Sale, put on by friend of the show, Alexa Kang. And again, I'm going to read her blurb as I did last week. This is from Alexa. She says, "While we anticipate the upcoming release of director Christopher Nolan's summer blockbuster movie Dunkirk, the authors of the Facebook Second World War Club have joined together to offer readers interested in World War II more riveting tales beyond Dunkirk. From July 21st until July 27th, more than 40 World War II fiction authors will discount their books to 99 cents to bring you back in time to witness the harrowing experience as well as stories of courage, bravery, and sacrifice in a war that impacted the entire world. This is a great chance to discover new books. 12 of us are currently running a Rafflecopter giveaway for this promo. During the promo period, we'll also be giving out, by random drawing, audiobook and print book prizes, including a copy of Andrew Levine's Dunkirk, The History Behind the Motion Picture. Please note, Andrew Levine, the publisher William Morrow Paperback, and the movie Dunkirk are not affiliated with us in any way. You can find out more about the Dunkirk Week World War II Epic Book Sale by going to http://alexakang.com/dunkirk-book-sale and watch our promo trailer on YouTube. I'm going to have links to those in the show notes. A slight modification from Alexa. She said they actually have now closer to 50 authors offering 99-cent sales this week. So that's beginning today, July 21st, 2017, running for a week. And then next week, this was just finalized yesterday. Next week, I'll be reading one more World War II historical fiction that's going to be from author Jonathan Isaacs. So three in a row. Big deal if you're into World War II, if you're into historical fiction, if you're into historical romance, if you just want to check out some new authors for dirt cheap, check out this promo. Go back and listen last week to the show. I read from Roberta Kagan's All My Love, Dietrich, which is a Holocaust novel. And do listen in next week for Jonathan Isaacs as well. All right, I'd like to have a short poetry reading. It's been a few weeks, and today's poem is very short. This is entitled Trochaic Pentameter. Someone told me I should be a poet or a painter. So I bought a bucket and a book of poems, and I painted over every single page of nonsense. All right, that is my quite brief trochaic pentameter, which, of course, is written in trochaic pentameter. And I'll post that in the show notes for your amusement as well. All right, on to David Spiller. David doesn't have a very large online presence. He actually doesn't have a website that I'll be linking to today. I'll be linking directly in the show notes to his book, Girl at Dunkirk. But if you go to Amazon and you find Girl at Dunkirk and then you ask for the Amazon author page, you're going to find a few other titles, including Pilot Error, which I think he might consider a flagship because his Facebook page is entitled Pilot Error, and I'll be leaving a link to that in the show notes as well. Out of Burma, A Southerner in the North of England. These are just a few titles, and I'm actually not going to go on because it's entirely possible that not all of the titles on Amazon under the name David Spiller are by our David Spiller. But it looks as though the David Spiller from whom we're reading today writes primarily historical fiction. No big surprise there. And what I'd like to do in lieu of an Amazon author bio today is read the blurb, that is the book description, that he wrote for Girl at Dunkirk. So this is from the Amazon page for the book. It is May 1940, and people in the English coastal town of Ramsgate wonder what Britain's declaration of war with Germany will lead to. Then, members of the British Expeditionary Force in France start dribbling back home to Ramsgate Harbor like defeated men. Gradually, the truth emerges. Unless the 300,000 troops trapped in the French coast can be evacuated, Britain's war effort will be all but over. Amongst the private citizens volunteering to supplement the British Navy's effort is the 21-year-old Chrissy Selleck. Together with her father, she crosses the channel in their 30-foot motor yacht, Blythe Spirit. They ferry troops from the beaches onto big ships lying offshore, then enter the maelstrom of Dunkirk Harbor itself, exposed to the full force of German firepower. Their story is intertwined with the exploits of two ordinary soldiers, a dispatch rider and a territorial, who link up by chance to make the hazardous journey across France to Dunkirk, collecting a stray dog along the way. Chrissy Selleck is a female presence on the almost exclusively male scene of Dunkirk. In 4 days of relentless endeavor, she faces both triumphs and tragedies and realizes that her sheltered life in Ramsgate will never be the same again. All right, so that is the book description for David Spiller's Girl at Dunkirk. And again, I'll leave a link to that in the show notes. All right, so before we get to the reading, I just want to remind everyone, as always, that today's reading is performed and recorded and presented here with the author's exclusive permission. I'm not charging you to listen to this, and David gave me his permission to include the reading. Do come back next week, and I want to include as a last-minute plug that my own book, The Lunar Gambit, is $2.99 on Amazon. It's in Kindle Unlimited, free to read if you're there. This is military science fiction, and I have 2 free prequel stories totaled, which is free on Amazon and Barnes & Noble with no strings attached, and The Trials of Io, which is a free story that you only get if you sign up for my mailing list. And I'll leave a link to my mailing list sign up as well in the show notes. There's my own personal plug because it's my show. All right, without any further ado, here is a reading. It's an excerpt, a short excerpt from Chapter 7 from David Spiller's Girl at Dunkirk. Thanks, and I'll see you again next week. Girl at Dunkirk by David Spiller. Preamble to Chapter 7. In 1940, during World War II, private British citizens volunteered to help with the evacuation of British and French troops from the French port of Dunkirk. Amongst them was the 21-year-old Chrissy Selleck and her father in their 30-foot motor yacht, Blythe Spirit. While delivering a blimpish British officer, Colonel Baker, to Dunkirk Harbor, they are hampered by a fault in one of their engines, which they fail to repair. This is the point at which Colonel Baker approaches Chrissy as she stands in the bow of the boat. From Chapter 7. Did you get anywhere with that busted engine, miss?
We couldn't do it, she answered.
I see. So what happens on your return journey?
We try and get back on the one engine, though it means carrying fewer troops. Or just possibly we might get a tow.
Suppose I get a couple of Royal Engineers to look at it. Those chaps can fix most things, what?
She stared at him. She wanted to tell him nobody used the expression what in that way, outside a comedy show. Instead, she said,
But can you do that? I mean, would they bother to help a small boat like ours?
They will if I ask them.
As they talked, her father was guiding Blithe Spirit towards a space on the mole. Between them and the lighthouse, a plethora of small boats bobbed on the water. Scoots, drifters, motor yachts, whalers. The occasional shell whined overhead and plunged into the deep.
Well, Colonel, she said, unconvinced that his plan was remotely a goer.
Of course, if it's at all possible, that would be good. How would it work, exactly?
I'll have to locate the chaps I'm thinking of, he said.
May take a bit of time. How about one of your crew comes with me into town and waits somewhere under cover, and I'll bring them to you, eh?
By now, Mr. Selleck had the boat beside the mole. French troops were milling about on the walkway, none of them keen to grab a line. So Chrissy used their ladder to get herself on top and tied up to a Samson post. They conferred about Baker's suggestion, and Mr. Selleck jumped at the idea. He never felt happy unless both engines were operational. They had a brief but touchy exchange about whether she should be the one to accompany the colonel. Chrissy argued that she'd be safer, albeit not safe, somewhere on land, rather than being a sitting duck in the harbor. And Mr. Selleck reluctantly concurred. In fact, she couldn't wait to see what conditions were like in the town. Her father had often said curiosity would be the death of her, and she was about to put it to the test.
"We'll wait here for an hour," Mr. Selleck told the colonel. "Longer than that, and I'll assume it's no go. In which case you come back, Chrissy, and we'll take a limited number of troops on board and get the hell out of here." So Chrissy found herself negotiating the mole in the company of an army officer. His seniority encouraged British soldiers to make way for them, French troops less so. Progress along the top was far from straightforward. She marveled that the uncertain structure had served to embark men in their tens of thousands. They were essentially moving down a plankway just wide enough to accommodate three men standing abreast. The sides were protected by wooden railings, though there were frequent gaps in these, and for that matter, in the planking underfoot. A moment's inattention could be disastrous. Once Chrissy stumbled and might have gone over the edge, had Baker not seized her arm. He moved quickly, sure-footed as a mountain goat, and she had to exert herself to keep up with him. At the lighthouse, an army captain and an orderly stepped smartly forward, and Baker returned their salutes.
He explained Chrissy's presence and inquired about a place that could serve as a rendezvous later on. All four of them then pressed on into the town itself. Here, Chrissy's curiosity was satisfied, and in spades. She'd never conceived of anything like it. Progress through the town was only possible on foot. The streets were littered with debris where house fronts had collapsed outwards. A row of warehouses, burning fiercely, emitted a tremendous heat, and flames spat up through gaps in the pavements. Their footsteps crunched from walking on 1,000 shards of glass. Dead bodies lay untended, and she recognized the odor of blood amongst the fumes of cordite and burning oil. Like most people in the streets, they coughed and spluttered whilst moving along. The light was absurdly bright for a town that was without power in the middle of the night. As they rounded a corner, Baker grabbed Chrissy and yanked her into his arms. Before she could protest, a terrified horse charged past, narrowly missing them both. She got a glimpse of its flaring nostrils and felt the animal's hide scrape against her. Further down the street, an ammunition truck had caught fire and was going off in all directions. She thought of her father and Joss, moored under the mole, and hoped they were safe, but had no wish to be anywhere but where she was. She reveled in the town's crazy atmosphere.
"This could be the place for you," said Baker. "Hardly ideal, but my chaps reckon it's the best we're going to find."
They'd stopped outside a building that had been some kind of drinking establishment. The name was displayed over the entrance, but as some letters were missing and others dangled uselessly, the title remained a mystery.
"It's an estaminet," Baker explained, a word that meant nothing to her. "Hang around here and I'll get back as soon as I can. You should be safe enough."
"If anywhere is safe," she said.
"And if the French don't get you. Cheery bye for now."
Within seconds, Baker and the other two had gone, leaving Chrissy standing on what passed for a pavement outside the anonymous estaminet. She stared open-mouthed at the stuff going on around her. Somehow or other, the owners had rigged up a power source so that the cafe blazed with light, making it an ideal target for German shells. The place was also distinguished by its crush of troops, British and French, that thronged inside and spilled out into the street, many of them clutching wine glasses. It struck her they were behaving like Ramsgate citizens outside the Vale Road Tavern on a summer's Saturday evening shortly before closing time. "What is this place?" she inquired of a tubby British corporal.
"This here? Don't you know the Café de Fleur?"
He gestured extravagantly, slopping wine from his glass. "Fleur? That's flowers, isn't it?"
"Search me, lady."
Her shifts at the Vale Road Tavern had given Chrissy a good grasp of male inebriation, and she judged this man to be well over the limit. Had she been working the bar in Ramsgate, she'd have refused to serve him. But there was clearly nobody at the bar in this establishment. Alcohol was freely available from an as-yet undisclosed source. it accounted for the buoyant mood amongst the assembled company. Merry, but not yet maudlin. These troops might almost have forgotten that a war was raging outside, that at any moment a German shell could blow the lot of them sky high. Perhaps that was the point, she thought. Unusually, Chrissy was not the only female present. At least three other women were about, all French, all indulging as if there were no tomorrow. And local men, too, one of them in the traditional French beret. "Don't tell me people are still living here," she asked the tubby corporal.
"That's right, lady. You wouldn't want to miss a party like this, would you?"
"There's a lot of 'em what are down in the cellars," Tubby's mate told her. "Waiting for the Boche to arrive. They'll be okay, long as we're not in uniform." A French soldier detached himself from the crowd and bowed toward Chrissy, clicking his heels. She knew he was some sort of officer from the gubbins on his shoulders, not to mention the man's overweening self-confidence. He addressed her with the familiar French flourish, as if every word he spoke was of earth-shaking importance. Chrissy was amused, but found she liked it. She'd never had formal tuition in the language, yet discovered from dealing with French sailors in Ramsgate that she was quick to pick up its essentials. Even so, she'd not understood a word, the officer had said. "Pardon," she told him. "Je suis anglaise?"
"Tant pis," he responded.
"Mademoiselle is very charming."
"Drives me up the wall the way they speak English," said the tubby corporal in an aside to his mate.
"Only thing worse is the way they speak French," said the mate.
"Mademoiselle, je permets," the officer indicated his own wine glass.
"Un verre de vin?"
"Oh, très charmant," said Tubby.
"Plume de ma tante," said the mate, apparently under the impression they were a double act. Though she'd worked in a pub, Chrissy had never tasted wine and didn't want it now. Besides, she needed to keep a clear head for the hours to come. But she wanted to retain the Frenchman's attention because he was the most attractive man she'd ever set eyes on.
"Merci," she told him, "but only un peu."
She mimed with thumb and forefinger.
"Un peu, vraiment."
"Oui, oui, oui." Like all the French nation, he was devoted to their absurd word for yes.
"Attendez un moment."
He about turned and plunged into the fray, returning with another glass of red wine in hand. The Brit double act evaporated in the face of competition, and Chrissy's new friend urged her to take a sip.
"Try it, mademoiselle."
She sipped and restrained herself from pulling a face. It tasted nothing like any alcohol she'd tried before or wanted to try again.
"You do not like?"
"Je ne sais pas," she said.
She thought about removing his hand from her waist, but it felt good there. Then,
"You are hungry, no?"
"Why angry? Of course not. Je suis satisfait." No, no, mademoiselle. Henri, confin.
He made an eating motion.
Oh, hungry. Well, I like to eat, yes. But surely you don't have food in here.
We have ragout, he said. You like?
Chrissy thought she misunderstood, then noticed that several French soldiers in the place were eating. And was she imagining things? Or could that be the aroma of cooked mutton?
Ragout? She repeated. C'est possible?
Naturellement,
he shrugged in the Gallic way.
Un moment.
Off he went again, leaving Chrissy wondering what she'd let herself in for. In Ramsgate, if a man took a girl to the pictures 2 or 3 times, he'd expect to kiss her afterwards. What was the going rate for a dish of ragout in the dying hours of free France? She considered making a bolt for it, but the urge to stay was stronger. He was back in no time with 2 plates of food and took her to a small table against the wall. 2 French soldiers readily made way for the officer, though he was polite about it, scattering some pardons around. Perhaps it was a consequence of time and place, but the food tasted wonderful.
Naturellement, this was France.
The officer ate with delicate manners, something she always appreciated. The table was so small, their heads almost touched as they consumed the meal. Beneath it, the man had 1 of Chrissy's legs clasped between his and a knee in her crotch. Her appetite waned as desire welled up with a carnal fierceness she'd not known before. Chrissy was not experienced with men, least of all French men, but something told her an invitation would follow the meal. She fretted about engaging in such light-hearted behavior, actually not that light-hearted, when men were dying all around. She wondered what British soldiers would think of her fraternizing with the enemy, then remembered that the French were on the same side. Sure enough, the officer rose to his feet and invited her to go to the back of the building. She didn't bother to feign reluctance. They went through a side door, away from the blazing light, and into an unlit corridor.
This concludes another episode of the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. Thanks for joining me, your host, Benjamin Douglas, for another indie author reading. If you liked what you heard, be sure to visit http://thebookspeakspodcast.wordpress.com for more episodes and for links to the author's website and the author's Amazon author page in the show notes. If you'd like to follow me on my own author journey, you can find me at http://benjamindouglasbooks.wordpress.com. And of course, if you're an indie author interested in having your work featured on the show, or if you're interested in discussing having your book read and produced by me as an audiobook, feel free to contact me at benjamindouglasbooks@gmail.com. Thanks for joining me today. I hope you have a productive and enjoyable weekend.